It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the NPR shows that makes its debut on 90.5 WESA this weekend is a new cooking show, or new to us, called America's Test Kitchen. It will make its debut on 90.5 WESA Sunday at 2 p.m., and I'm joined now by the host of the show, Chris Kimball. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm great. My pleasure.
There are a number of cooking shows on TV and radio. Not as many on radio, but of course we have The Splendid Table on our station. And this show is similar in that it is a cooking show, but I'm guessing much different from what we're used to hearing in terms of public broadcasting cooking fare.
Yeah, this is less about, first of all, I love Splendid Table. I mean, Lynn Rosetta Casper is brilliant. But this is less about recipes. It's more about a wider range of things, equipment and taste tests of foods and interviews with a whole range of people, including the guy running the mission to Mars, and call-ins. And we try to talk about what goes wrong with food, the good stuff versus the bad stuff. We have a segment called Hot or Not, where we have one kitchen gadget we love and one we really hate. We always like to talk about the reality of home cooking. So the show is really about what goes wrong as much as it is about what goes right.
Tell me about this whole thing with Mars and the food element involved.
Yeah, we talked to the guy who's in charge of the program, and it's like 9 months to get there, 9 months to get back, and you spend time there. Well, the question is, what are you going to eat going there? What are the problems with that? What about water? How are you going to grow food? Do you have to get a shuttle to get the stuff there before you show up? Essentially, they can't carry enough food for 2.5 years, which I think is the length of the mission. So they're going to have to figure out how to get food up there before they arrive, how to grow stuff. And then coming back, it was interesting. They were talking about insulating the space capsule against radiation, which is a problem in space, especially for that amount of time. So going out, they insulate the space capsule with water that they're going to use to drink. And then all of the waste, human waste that they collect during the process of the mission, that's what's used to insulate the space capsule coming back from Mars.
So wow.
More than you probably wanted to know about the practical issues about digestion, waste, and eating when you plan a mission. It's not just about propulsion and physics. It's about some very basic human issues.
Well, you know, the whole problem, the whole conundrum here that this presents, it's kind of set your mind to whirling. I'm wondering if you came up with any advice for them, Chris.
Well, I also interviewed Mary Roach, who wrote about Packing for Mars, which is about eating on the space station. And they actually determined, it was very interesting, there's no point in sitting down and eating food since there's no gravity. So they thought that no one would want to do that. Well, after a few months, they discovered the ritual of sitting down and eating, quote-unquote, dinner, was important. So they had Velcro installed so people could actually sit. And then they had to think about the food in terms of having mouthfeel and taste and chew, because they didn't take that into account. So when they're in space for months at a time, the pleasure of sitting down and having food with other people and actually having something to chew and have that pleasure in the mouth became exceptionally important to them. And so they had to really think about food in a totally different way. The other problem is you can't have crumbs, because if crumbs escape into a zero-gravity atmosphere, it's the stuff just floating around the space station and can get into instruments and cause all sorts of problems. But all of this, both the Mars mission and the space station, was about the human element. And even when you're thinking about going into space, it turns out the most important thing are the things that are important here on Earth.
We're talking with Chris Kimball, and that's just one of the topics that has come up on his show, America's Test Kitchen, which is not just for America, it's for outer space, too, and other planets, apparently. Chris Kimball's show is going to debut on 90.5 WESA on Sunday. How did you get involved in food in terms of wanting to understand how to be a cook and all of the things that go with the art of cooking?
I don't know genetically why I was predisposed, but when I was 7 or 8 years old, I baked my first chocolate cake and out of joy of cooking and made a 7-minute frosting, which turned out like snot. I mean, it was really bad. I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. And I remember my family dutifully finishing their piece. I think the cake was actually okay, a little overbaked, but the frosting was horrendous. And I got the satisfaction, although knowing I messed up, of people consuming what I created. I think it's my desperate need for positive feedback, because when you cook, within a matter of hours or minutes, you feed people and they enjoy it, hopefully. And you get immediate feedback. And I don't think you get that in many things in the world today. You know what I mean? When we do what we do, people come up and are appreciative. And you've given somebody something that makes their life a little better. It's that feedback I love. And so I think that's, whether I'm cooking or helping somebody else to cook, I think that's the joy of all of this. It's not the fancy food, or you can do the perfect this or the perfect that. It's just that you are able to make good food. And how many things can you do with your hands anymore? You can't fix your car. You know, people don't tend to fix their homes anymore. The idea of doing things by yourself, you know, do-it-yourself projects are pretty limited now. People don't make their own Halloween costumes, at least most people don't. But cooking is the last thing we can do, one of the last things we can do with our hands, and that's enormously satisfying.
And you, of course, have the added skill of not only being able to cook and being a chef, but you also have the ability to communicate how to do that and to share and articulate your love of food. Where did that skill develop, or how did it develop?
Well, the first of all, I'm not a chef, let's be clear. I'm not a chef, but I've always felt that when you talk down to people, or if you say, you know, you can cook a dinner for 8 in half an hour, which, you, by the way, you can't do, just doesn't work, you're not talking about the reality of the home cook. My interest always has been, as a quote-unquote educator, is to say, you know what, making apple pie is really hard. You try to roll out the dough and it falls apart, and you have to press it in the pan, and this happens and that happens. So my interest always has been, because I was so frustrated taking cooking classes in the 70s, nobody talked about what goes wrong or how to fix things that go wrong or why things go wrong. So my interest was always in bad food. I think you learn more from bad food than good food. So let's burn the fish on the grill, get that over with, and say, okay, well, you know, it's stuck. You know, the salmon stuck and fell apart. Okay, well, why? You know, here's why. And then we'll do it the right way. People have a huge fear of failure in cooking. That's the number one problem. If you start off by making the same mistakes they make, then everyone's comfortable. Go, oh, okay, well, you know, hey, he's America's Test Kitchen. He screws it up too. And then you can say, okay, well, let's figure out why, and together we're going to go figure this out. And I think that's a good way of teaching people anything, instead of just saying, look, here's how to do it, step one, step two, you know, it's going to be fine. Well, you know, most of the time it's not fine. Most people at home, most of the time, the recipes don't turn out exactly the way they want them to. Either they're pretty good, or sometimes they're terrible because things go wrong. And so I think that's the rich treasure in the culinary world, is all that stuff that we've done that didn't work. That's the fun part. Just talking about the perfect recipe, the fun part is, well, how'd you make it perfect? Because it didn't start out perfect. You know, it started out being a mess. That's the fun part, is to go from bad to good.
It's America's Test Kitchen. We've been talking with the host of the show, Chris Kimball. The program debuts on 90.5 WESA on Sunday at 2 p.m. Chris, you are a gracious man and quite a raconteur. I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the NPR shows that makes its debut on 90.5 WESA this weekend is Ask Me Another, hosted by a familiar face in the comedy world, Ophira Eisenberg, selected as one of New York Magazine's top 10 comics that funny people find funny. Say that 5 times fast. She has appeared on The Late Show with Craig Ferguson, Comedy Central, and The Today Show, and she joins us now by phone. Ophira Eisenberg, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be on Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes. Well, we're happy to have Ask Me Another on 90.5 WESA, which, by the way, will be airing starting this Sunday at 10 a.m. So 10 in the morning on Sunday is our first chance for Pittsburgh to hear Ask Me Another. And so my question to you is this is a game show, but unlike other game shows, it's a lot of unique twists and turns with this program. Explain to us how it works.
So I would call it a comedy game show. There's a lot of fun stuff going on, and it's not, it sort of has a feel of a pub trivia night that is actually well-produced and well-structured, thanks to a lot of great writers. But we have, it's not standard trivia, they're really clever games, and we have a music game. We have house musician Jonathan Colton, that many people know and love his music. So he'll play a music game. There's mashup games. There's word games. But I'll give you an example. One of my favorites, sometimes we do crowdsource games. We had one where we read one-star Amazon reviews about famous works of literature or best-selling novels, and our contestants had to guess what particular piece of work we were talking about from this horrendous user review. Or we'll do a mashup game where we're putting together, we have like an idea. All right, to make movies more marketable, we're going to insert actors' names into them. And so we'll clue you to that, and you have to come up with, you know, there's something about Drew Carey. Or we'll do a favorite one called This, That, or the Other, where we give you a weird word, and the categories will be cocktail, pro wrestling move, or old-timey occupation. And you have to figure out which one it is.
Now, who thinks these games up? Is it your brainchild, or is there someone else helping you do this?
No, we have professional game writers. There's a whole bunch of them that are freelance, and then they're all writing and submitting games, just whatever is in their head, or sometimes we'll request a specific kind. And then our puzzle editor, Art Chung, goes through them, and then we talk about, all right, this one's too hard, or this one's too easy, or we need a music game about this. We're doing a holiday show coming up. We're like, we would like a game that makes people talk about Hanukkah with that cuss sound, or we want a game that people are going to sing along. So we'll come up with some ideas, and then like magic, these game writers put them into action.
So, Ophira, how did you get this gig?
How did I get this gig? That is a great question. I actually auditioned.
They had auditions. And was this something you were seeking out? Is this, because let's face it, this is a secret dream for a lot of people, and not just entertainers.
Yeah.
They want, you know, the idea of being a game show host. So was this something that you had in mind, or, you know, the opportunity was presented to you and you just decided, I'll go for it?
Yeah, it is actually a very common path, actually, for comedians, if you think about it, strangely. There's a lot of, and I'm Canadian. Maybe there's a little secret path in there, too. But, no, I was doing stand-up, and I also hosted and was telling stories with The Moss. And, you know, just through a variety of things, became sort of closer and closer to the public radio world and knowing people in it. And when this opportunity arose, and I was like, oh, you need someone who's really good on their feet. You need some fun stuff. You need to have, you know, a lot of spontaneity and keep things positive. I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. And it luckily worked out.
And did you seek advice from fellow Canadian Alex Trebek when you...
I know, right?
You knew I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I called him on our special Canadian landline that only a few of us have a phone number to.
Right, and the rest... And the rest was history. And this is something that seems to resonate with people. I had a chance to watch a clip, and you've got, you know, the live audience there, and there's a lot going on in this place in Brooklyn where you take the show.
Yeah. So that is right. We have the contestants who are on the show are live. They are people that have applied. That we give them a contestant quiz, which is quite difficult just to see where their brain's at. And then we select them.
We're not letting you in unless you have hit the right score.
You have to make the quiz hard so that when they are on the stage and the nerves kick in and all of that stuff, everything has to be easier than that quiz, because it will be harder just with the added pressure of being on stage. So we're at this cool venue in Brooklyn called the Bell House. It's sort of a music venue, upscale music venue. And it really does, when you're there in that audience, they're folding chairs and people that come, you know, it's not a theatrical setting at all. So people, when they come, they're like, wow, this is a public radio taping. This is very, you know, people have little plastic cups of beer in their hand or whiskey or whatever they're drinking. It's a very fun feel.
And radio game shows were, there was a, you know, there was a staple of old-time radio. And
absolutely.
And NPR's helped, and public radio's helped to reinvent it. You have Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and game shows like that. Was there any concern about not wanting this particular show, Ask Me Another, to sound like the other show before it, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. No, we wouldn't do the same show, so... You know, we're not a news quiz. The games we play are, you know, what we call evergreen, but they're not particularly tied to a time or a place. They're more general knowledge or word games or different ways of thinking about stuff. A lot of music games are obviously dealing with music but throughout history. And also a couple differences that we were like, okay, let's have the people live. We'll have live contestants there, so it's not phone-in. We do have a phone-in every once in a while with the contestants. And then we have a VIP, which is a special guest, whether it's a comic, Hannibal Buress, or we had Ethan Hawke, or we just had Amy Mann, musicians, different musicians, actors, writers. They come on our show. They are physically present, and we play a game that they have said in the previous that they're like, oh, I think I would do well in a game about, I don't know, 70s music. So then the puzzle writers will write in the game, and then we subject them. I interview them, and then we subject them to their game and see how they do.
So they end up having to, you know, identify songs like Afternoon Delight and things like that.
right.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Ophira Eisenberg. She is the host of Ask Me Another, which is coming to 90.5 WESA, debuting Sunday at 10 a.m. You know, Ophira, most game show hosts, you know, the popular famous shows on television and even on NPR, they're hosted by men. So are you feeling like, as a woman, you're breaking new ground? You're a bit of a trailblazer?
2014, they got a woman hosting a trivia show. What is going to happen next? yes, we've come a long way. But no, you're right, and that was a conscious decision. At some point during the process of the NPR folks still developing the show, to also give it a little bit of a different feel, they're like, wait a second, exactly what you said. Why isn't there a woman out there hosting a puzzle show? That just seems so odd. I stepped in to break new ground.
And here you are. And, you know, you have such an interesting background. And one of the things that I was fascinated to read about as I was researching this segment is the fact that you have among, you know, your other talents as a stand-up comedian and the appearances you've had on national shows, you've written a debut memoir with the perfect title, really, Screw Everyone, Sleeping My Way to Monogamy, which was recently optioned by Zucker Productions for a feature film. So tell us about this tome of yours.
So that book is, it's a memoir about my different dating and relationship experiences throughout time. It's the spoiler of how it ends is in the title. Sleeping My Way to Monogamy. I do end up with someone at the end, but it's entertaining, fun book, has definitely some poignant moments just about my experiences, and I think the title is somewhat a little more perhaps pointing to a salacious memoir than it is. It's got some edge, but it's not page-by-page pornographic or anything like that by any level. It's smart and fun, and I had a really good time writing it. And then all of a sudden, I get a call to go talk to people about pitching it as another project. And Jerry Zucker, who you might know from many things, but a lot of it, when he directed Ghost, and what I think his first movie that he was part of that everyone knows is Airplane, of course.
Yep.
But I talked to those people, and they were like, this is fun, and it's edgy, and it's smart, and we don't have anything like this, so let's see what we can do. And I was shocked and thrilled.
And who would you cast as you in the movie?
I know, that is the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think about it a lot. I think, I was saying, Kristen Ritter, who you might remember if you watched Breaking Bad. She was the girlfriend, and she was also the star of a television show called The Bee in Apartment 20-something. I'm forgetting the name now. But, you know, I'm just looking for dark-haired, smart actresses with bangs. They suggested Jennifer Lawrence, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, if we can get Jennifer Lawrence, that would work well.
Last question. When the Calgary Flames, because we all know Calgary's your hometown, Ophira, when the Flames come to New York to play the Rangers, who do you root for?
Flames, Flames, Flames. You can't take the Flames out of my blood. The Flames. And the Flames, you know, it was a while ago now, but I do remember going to the Garden to see the Rangers-Flames game. And at that particular game, the Flames beat the Rangers. It was 3-0. And let me tell you, I found out a lot of people in that crowd were secretly Canadian and from Calgary. There was cheering and then a lot of apologizing.
Ophira Eisenberg, she carries a torch for the Flames, and she is the host of Ask Me Another, which is debuting on 90.5 WESA Sunday at 10 a.m. Ophira Eisenberg, it has been a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much, and good luck in Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much. Happy to be on the station.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of our program, you can go to our website at WESA.FM. There you'll find past segments and entire shows for your listening pleasure. Until next time, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.